classy girl's backyard with no Carol. Hi, Barbara. Morning, Kathy.
Morning.
Hello, Ed.
Yeah.
Hi, Delina John.
Terry.
Morning, Terry. Hi, Dennis.
Those apricots are huge.
I know.
Morning, Bob. Hi, Claire. So much to catch up on with each other. Good morning, everyone. Astrophysicist, cosmologist, planetary scientist, and author Neil deGrasse Tyson said this: if you think of feelings you have when you are awed by something, for example, knowing that elements in your body trace to exploded stars, I call that a spiritual reaction. Speaking of awe and majesty, where words fail you. So as we gather together this morning and continue to honor the contributions of science, let's celebrate the awe and wonder and mystery of all of life. Come, let us worship. Welcome to the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Durango and our online worship space. I'm Bonnie Miller, a member of UUFD and today's volunteer host for the Sunday service. There's a big sign on the corner of our church building that says, "Even apart, we're in this together." And that reflects our intentions that the current limits to our physical connections will only heighten the importance of our commitment to each other through our beloved community. We continue to support each other in our search for truth and meaning, and we work together for more justice and more love in our own lives and in the world. Our covenantal relationship with one another sustains us in doing this, as well as building our capacity for love and connection. Mary is continuing our summer series in which we're focusing on UU scientist, and she's speaking today about Cecilia Payne Kapushkin. So I think I'd like to give a moment to Ben Waddell to share, since I believe Liza said he has arrived. So Ben Waddell, if you're here with us, we'd like to give a moment for you to share about Compañeros. You'll need to unmute yourself, and then we're ready.
Hi, good morning. This is Ben. I couldn't seem to get the link to work, and I finally figured it out. So Barry and I were kind of calling back and forth, but I appreciate you all having me this morning. I know some of you, I'm sure, and others I don't, but I work at Fort Lewis College in the Sociology and Criminology Department, and I'm also on the board of Compañeros. And I'll just talk briefly about some of the work that Compañeros has been doing, and I'd be happy to answer any questions as well. Some of you probably know this, but Compañeros has been around for quite a while. In the late 1990s, Compañeros was formed around an effort to keep a ICE detention center out of the Durango and the Plata County area. And ever since then, Compañeros has kind of shifted towards, you know, a mission of serving immigrants within the Four Corners region. And hence the name, you know, Compañeros, the Four Corners Immigrant Resource Center. 2 years ago, Matt Karka took over Compañeros, found the organization in a moment of transition, and has really been able to financially get Compañeros into a situation to where we can better serve immigrants within the area. So we're really excited about the future of Compañeros. Through fundraising and grant writing, Compañeros has put itself in a situation to really do some amazing work in the years to come. But of course, a big part of Compañeros' ability to do that work depends on the community and the community's outreach through the organization. So some of the things that Compañeros is doing right now, Compañeros has been working with a group called La Escuelita. Kim Martin and Beatriz Garcia have started that over in the West Side Trailer Park right off 160. They meet Wednesdays and Fridays from 5 to 7 and help the children of immigrants with their school as well as just, you know, in the summer, keeping up with their educational, you know, kind of mission. And so in the next few weeks, they'll really be gearing up so that they can help kids with, you know, keeping up with their homework and such. We're not sure how many kids will be on a 5-day or a 2-day schedule, or some will, you know, might be doing a homeschool. But what we do know is within the immigrant community, there's oftentimes a disconnect between the language that, you know, is used at school, which is English, as well as just the kind of the culture of schooling here in the United States compared to wherever parents have come from. And so La Escuelita is designed to really help parents and children navigate that system better. Other thing that Compañeros has done since COVID started is distribute food and also facilitate getting financial help to families that are unable to get a stimulus package. So, you know, for example, a lot of families do not have a social security number or are afraid to receive the benefits that the government might be providing right now as a result of COVID, because they're afraid that it'll impact their ability to get to change their status in the future. So to move from undocumented to some sort of documentation. That's a result of the no public charge law that's existed for some time, but was really ramped up in February by the current administration, and has made it very difficult for immigrants to access public help without the possibility of that hampering their ability to get papers and or legal documentation in the future. So through a number of different organizations working at the state and national level, Compañeros has dealt out well over somewhere around $116,000 to immigrants in the area. And so that alongside food security, dropping food at the homes of immigrants has made a big difference since COVID began. Right now, Compañeros is in the midst of rethinking its mission, in large part because Compañeros recently received a grant from the Colorado Trust, a 4.5-year grant, that will really allow Compañeros to think about how to better serve health equity issues within the immigrant community. And so we're really excited about that. I think, you know, when we think of health equity, we oftentimes think of actual physical health or access to medicine or doctors, but the Colorado Trust is doing some really great work around this at the Colorado level, but also through their home institution in North Carolina across the nation. But they're really looking at health from a social determinant of health perspective. And so I think it'll be great for Compañeros to think about what social factors influence well-being within the immigrant community. And you know, using leveraging those funds that we've received from the Colorado Trust to improve well-being within the immigrant community in the months and years to come. So that's a little bit about what Compañeros is doing. One other thing that we're going to be involved in over the next year or two that I'm super excited about, and I think we all are, is I'm gonna take a VISTA. It's an immigration. It's a legal certification program through Villanova called VISTA. And in taking that course over the next year, there's 3 different modules. So it's kind of like a 3-semester thing. I will become certified with the Department of Justice to fill out legal documentation for immigrants, as well as to represent immigrants in immigration court. And so that will allow for Compañeros, through my certification, to become certified with the DOJ and be able to actually solicit grants from the DOJ. So that can make a huge difference in being able to serve immigrants that are looking for U visas, or other forms of asylum visas. And so we're really excited about that. I'm particularly excited because I will design a course at Fort Lewis College on immigration rights that will allow for our students to become certified in filling out immigration paperwork as well. So I think it'll really create some nice synergy between Compañeros and FLC. And of course, you know, the end goal in serving the immigrant community will help people get paperwork, which is, you know, one of the main things you can do to really improve someone's life in this country. So we're excited about all the things that that we're working on right now. Like I said, if you have any questions, I'm happy to answer them. Thank you.
Thank you, Ben.
Few have heard of her. She blazed a trail into a largely male-dominated scientific community and was an inspiration to many. Her thesis, Stellar Atmospheres, was hailed as the most brilliant PhD written ever in astronomy. She discovered what stars are made of, and that is one of the most fundamental discoveries in science. Cecilia Payne was indeed a unique child. Born in 1900, she had relentless curiosity, and her father encouraged it. Through him, she acquired a love of music and art, and together they explored nature. Eldest of three children, Cecilia loved her father deeply, but unfortunately, she was only four when he drowned. 8 years later, her mother, Emma, moved the family to a London suburb to focus on her brother Humphrey's education. Cecilia attended St. Mary's, a strict Church of England school. She was unable there to study mathematics or science, yet with her curious scientific mind, the teachers had their hands full. Her mother once said, "Cecilia lives largely in her enthusiasms." Her adventurous attitude was a bit too much for St. Mary's, and the principal finally told her, "You are prostituting your gifts," and expelled her on the spot. Her final year at preparatory school, she moved to St. Paul's in 1918, and that was a blessing. She was not just allowed to study science, she was encouraged. Cecilia described it as stepping from medieval times into the modern day. Adding inspiration, Gustav Holst, then director of St. Paul's, recognized her talent and encouraged her to pursue a career in music. Cecilia and fellow students heard his orchestral suite, The Planets, right after it was composed. She loved music, but she also had greater ambitions. She was very determined and a brilliant student, and what drove her was her relentless mind. Her mother did not support her advanced education, yet with persistence, the following year, Cecilia managed to get a scholarship to Cambridge, where she studied physics. Her interest in astrophysics began after she attended a lecture at the Royal Society of London, given by the handsome 37-year-old astronomer Arthur Eddington. Following that lecture, she went straight to her room and transcribed the whole talk word for word. Cecilia noted that the result was a complete transformation of my worldview. My world had been so shaken that I experienced something very like a nervous breakdown. He had discussed his 1919 expedition to the West African island of Principe to observe and photograph stars that were near a solar eclipse. This was a test of Albert Einstein's general theory of relativity from 1915, and after some deliberation, Eddington's results were accepted by the astronomical community, and this led to worldwide fame for Einstein. Cecilia Payne completed her studies at Newnham College at Cambridge, but a degree was not awarded her because of her sex. Cambridge did not grant degrees to the women that had earned them until 1947. Meanwhile, Arthur Eddington, then her professor, whom she greatly admired, had encouraged Cecilia to continue her studies at Harvard. Living amongst Victorian structures of England, she had little possibility of working in physics as a woman. Ambitiously, though, she sought and acquired several grants that allowed her to travel to the U.S. by steamship in 1923 and then to study at Harvard College Observatory. The odds against her were daunting. Harvard was an all-male institution, but she didn't let that stop her. She had a passion. She chose to work hard and be persistent. Payne's career marked a turning point at this world-class observatory under the direction of Harlow Shapley. Opportunities in astronomy were granted to women hired as computers, many of them unstudied and not expected to think. They worked tirelessly, though, to document, catalog, and record the stars photographed on fixed emulsion glass plates. Shapley gave Miss Payne permission to do as she pleased, because she had expressed a desire to pursue her research agenda, which was that of applying new theories of atomic structure and quantum physics to the analysis of stars. And with unfettered access to nearly 300,000 plates, she had ample opportunity to see patterns in the spectral composition of the stars. Working alongside Shapley's computers, she interacted with Wilhelmina Fleming, Antonia Mori, and Annie Jump Cannon. And a certain synergy of thought was ignited. These notable women had already had several scientific achievements earlier in the century, and the latter two, Antonia and Annie, became like adoptive mothers to Cecilia while she was at Harvard. But it was with Payne's PhD from Radcliffe College, now part of Harvard, that women entered the mainstream of astronomy. Her thesis, Stellar Atmospheres, established that hydrogen and helium were the primary elements in the stars, hydrogen being a million times more abundant than previously thought. She had accomplished the remarkable, yet still went largely unrecognized, as she was strongly dissuaded by her advisor, Henry Russell, saying that it contradicted the accepted wisdom at the time. Under such pressure not to rock the boat, she disregarded herself and stated in her thesis, although hydrogen and helium are manifestly very abundant in stellar atmospheres, the actual values derived are regarded as spurious and almost certainly not real. She made the recommended modification, but craftily inserted that word, almost. Right or wrong, she was still the first to make the observation. 4 years after her thesis, Russell found similar evidence through different means and wrote a paper finally persuading the astronomical community that indeed hydrogen and helium were the primary ingredients in the stars, never mentioning that his significant reversal, nor that he had persuaded Cecilia to characterize her results as almost certainly not real. He simply buried a nod to Cecilia toward the back of the paper, and he, in effect, took credit for the discovery. In 1928, it was declared by the president of Harvard that no woman should be granted a teaching appointment at Harvard. Yet, Cecilia was the first woman who was promoted to full professorship at Harvard and the first to chair a department in the Faculty of Arts and Sciences. She died in 1979, never knowing that her portrait, which was hung in ceremony in 2002, now resides in the faculty room at Harvard's University Hall. Regarding her religious life, as a young adult, she became a member of the London Quakers. Although her attendance was intermittent, she once spoke that the Church of England ceased to have meaning for her. In her autobiography, Payne spoke of seeking connection to a fountainhead, a spring that is the source of the flowing stream. She writes, "There are those, and I am one of them, who rebel at having to deal with an intermediary. They want to be in direct contact with the fountainhead, whether you call it God or the universe." In 1933, she met Russian-born astrophysicist Sergei Gapochkin, and she helped him get a visa to the U.S., and they married in 1934. They began a family and ultimately had three children. Cecilia loved music, literature, art, politics, cooking, sewing, and even soap making. You name it, she loved being a homemaker. Payne and her family were members of the First Unitarian Church in Lexington, where Cecilia taught Sunday school. Always inspiring others, Cecilia spoke to those considering science. "The reward of the young scientist is the emotional thrill of being the first person in the history of the world to see something, to understand something. Nothing can compare with that experience. The reward of the old scientist is the sense of having seen a vague sketch grow into a masterly landscape. On a personal level, I too was deeply inspired by Cecilia because she stood up for herself. She explored her passions, even in the face of adversity. And because she contributed in a major way to the universe story, planting seeds of this early, empirically based cosmology that deepens our understanding of the most profound questions in life. This empirically driven shift in perceptions of our origins also informs process theology, which I've come to appreciate. Process theology is the philosophical and theological position that God is always changing and becoming, just as is the universe. Paine also explored supernovas, the final evolutionary stage or death cycle of a massive star. Her work informed many scientists to come, and it was because of her work and those that followed that we now know that supernovas form all of the heavier elements that exist in our solar system, and that we, literally, you, I, and everything around us, are literally made of stardust. We evolved out of a progression of events that unfolded over 13.7 billion years. We are one process. We all emerge from that great flaring forth, and each of us carries a spark of that original spark. You are stardust. You are the universe, universing as you. Hold that thought the next time you lay on the ground and look up at the stars. Better still, as songwriter Peter Mayer suggests, go one step further. Lay on the ground, look up at the stars, and imagine that the sky is down and that you are held in a loving, gravitational embrace. Feel yourself held by the earth, held in this deep love we all share.
Oh, my, 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 my.